The string continues now with a catch-up chat with a musician who's been a presence in my life since before college, a long, long time. Paul Schaefer is one of the most successful TV music directors of all time. The Ontario native got his career started as music director of a Toronto production of Godspell in the 1970s, featuring a cast of future comic stars. He and Gilda Radner, for example, moved on to the original production of Saturday Night Live. Besides being David Letterman's bandleader from 1982 until 2015, Schaefer has been music director for numerous TV extravaganzas and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. He's now touring behind a new album called Paul Schaefer and the World's Most Dangerous Band, featuring the musicians from The Late Show. When we sat down, I asked him about how he prepared himself for life after Letterman.
You know, Dave made the decision a year before the show actually wrapped up. Told me one night, just before we went out, to do it. Oh. Hey, by the way, I get my notice today. What? Mm-hmm. And it was a year, you know. And during that year, we didn't even think about it. Just kept on doing the show. And then all of a sudden, it ended. And there we were going from 100 miles an hour down to zero. And it was quite an adjustment. I mean, we were very tightly wound all those years, you know, doing it every single day. Not much time. I mean, a week off here and there and stuff, of course. But mostly doing that show. And you get... you know, you get into it. As I say, we were a little bit tense, certainly. And then I said, well, I guess it's time to slow down and smell the roses. And that didn't work at all. I got absolutely depressed and sad right away. And this is no good, I said to myself. And then I just got a call out of the blue from an old friend, Seymour Stein, whom I got to know during all the years of doing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction dinners. Mm-hmm. And he said, how would you like to get back in the music business? And offered me this record deal on Rhino. And before I knew it, I was back in the studio playing the piano, making music again, cheered up right away. And I realized this is, you know, I got to keep going. This slowing down is not going to work.
Had you contemplated the post-Letterman life? Had you even imagined yourself?
Yes, I used to say, well, I'll have time, you know, I'll learn how to sight read. I never really learned how to sight read music, although I can read and write music and arrange and stuff. But that'll be great to be able to put a, you know, it takes time. Put a piece of music down in front of you and just read it off. You know, I'll do that. I'll learn the bass pedals on the organ. That I'll do. You know, I've always wanted to do that.
Right, cool.
I figure you're not a real organ player unless you can play those pedals on the Hammond organ. So those are my ambitions, but they didn't make any sense. I was just so used to going to work and playing every day. I was spoiled by it. It was a wonderful situation. Not only did I get to play every day, but I get to do comedy and improvise every night with the quickest, smartest guy out there, which he still is, I believe.
Right.
Dave Letterman.
And guest musicians, too. Must have been a treat, sort of never quite knowing how somebody was going to fit and what role did they want to play. But the sit-ins were frequent.
I mean, over the 33 years, as far as the rock and roll era, which may be coming to an end, as hip-hop and all that stuff takes over, but we certainly got to play with everybody. We missed Elvis and Sinatra, but otherwise, we did pretty well as far as who we got to play with. And yes, it was a wonderful treat. And yes, of course, I miss it, but here we are about almost 2 years, I guess, maybe 2 years afterwards, and I have finally come around to the realization of, geez, it was a pretty nice accomplishment to have lasted all that time, completed the run, had all of that fun, and eventually you got to move over and let somebody else have some of the fun.
What sort of sounds did you find yourself gravitating to make your own music? You'd been a kind of a chameleon in a way at the show, and did you have to ask yourself, am I a pop jazz piano player? Am I a more elaborate composer? Am I a rock and roller?
Of course I did, and as a studio player, I used to pride myself on being able to play any style, you know. That was kind of part of my fun and my specialty. Now, enough familiarity with the different styles that I could play for almost anybody. Yeah. So when it came time to do my own record, well, what style am I? I really didn't know. I love all the kinds of music, classical included. But my heart really lies with the R&B and soul music of my youth. That's what grabbed me as a kid. Even before the Beatles, you know, I remember watching Ed Sullivan and seeing Jackie Wilson. Oh, my goodness, that killed me way up in Canada. And then James Brown on the Tammy Show. oh my, you know, this is what, it just, cliche as it is, it just, it grabbed my soul, and that's what I gravitated to when I was, when it was time to figure out what is my own music. And I think that's the sort of the style of the record, R&B and soul, a lot of covers of some of my favorites and some tunes that I had never heard until I started putting things together. And definitely the show that I'm doing now with the old band from Letterman. And we all are so comfortable together. We finish each other's licks, if you will. We had fun making the record that way, and we're having an absolute gas on the road.
That's great. Well, one of the things I most wanted to ask you, given this opportunity, was all these music, these many music direction jobs you've had, really prominent stuff, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, major benefit concerts, and you arrive at these sometimes one-off or sometimes annual events, but there's going to be a new cast of musicians of immense caliber and often probably immense ego, and a sprawling situation that you have to bring into a produced thing. And it must be a very challenging thing. What has to happen? How do you make it happen? What's your philosophy about that?
Mainly respect for the artists, which I have, and I think that they feel it. In many cases, you know, especially for the people that I, from my era that I grew up with, they can feel, I think, that I love their music and have studied it. They hear me play it, and they know, in many cases, that I know it. At least I hope so, you know. And so it's obviously, you know, trying to give them what will make them comfortable to do their best. It's their face which is going to be on the camera, not mine. So whatever I do, I have to make them comfortable, give them a chance to sing their song, and treat them with the respect that they deserve. And once in a while, you get it wrong, of course. Some performers, you just can't do anything right. But for the most part, that has been my mantra, and it has worked. And in a lot of cases, in those multi-artist cases, sometimes the artists will have played with me already on the Letterman show, and that was a big advantage because they already knew my sign language and stuff, and you know, they had a certain level of confidence in me already. So that would help. You put a few of those people together like that, and everybody can work together.
Do you tend to go into those situations with an arrangement already done, sort of so prepared that the professionals see the parts and there's not a lot of questions, or do you like to let things...
Well, I mean, you have to be prepared, and you speak to them in advance, of course, and you kick around things, and what should we do? You know, shall we use the record as our model?
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that I've learned how to do is copy records. All this time I specialize in it. Or sometimes they might say, you know, I've got a live tape I'll send you. That's the way I'm doing it now.
Okay.
And that, of course, makes it very easy. If you can just give it to them the way it sounds on their live tape, then they'll be happy. They'll be comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's often a little jarring for people who aren't used to playing without their own musicians or their own tracks or their own DJ, whatever it is, you know. So, yes, one must be a little bit of a chameleon. And you try to be prepared, but of course, whatever the person wants, you know. No, I don't want, I'm not feeling it that way today, you know. Why don't we put in another two ball? You know, of course, you got to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be loose.
I expect, too, that there's no substitute for being utterly comfortable with live television and that moment that it has to go and happen and not whether anybody else around you, a guest artist, is ready for that.
I never thought of it that way, but yes, I guess. After all these years, I finally did get comfortable with that. I remember starting Saturday Night Live. I was in the house band for the first 5 years, and saying to myself, "This is going to be how do we do this?
Really,
what's going to happen?" Couldn't believe it. And then there were a couple of instances. I remember that time when John Sebastian, one of my idols, he had written and sung the theme of "Welcome Back, Carter." Welcome back, and he came on SNL to do it with our band, the house band, and he was just about boom, boom. He sang he played the intro, and when he was just about to sing "Welcome Back," woo, a big squeal of feedback came from his mic, and he backed off it, and he didn't sing, and we kept on playing the chords, and no one was singing, and we're live on television, and time froze and stood still, and nobody knew what to do. Before I knew it, the producer was right in front of me. "What's going on?" He said, "Start it over." oh, why didn't I think of that? You know, so from then on, I will all, you know, if something like that goes wrong, start it over. But you have to have the experience first,
right.
Make the first mistake, you know, and then hopefully you try not to make it again.
Right, right. Must take immense preparation just for the Letterman show nightly, like you said, different repertoires, guests, the preparation must be insane.
Letterman really was the opposite of that. It was so spontaneous.
Really?
With the exception of the musical act, of course,
exactly.
Which would rehearse. And if I were playing with them with my band, we would get about 50 minutes, 5-0, to rehearse with them. And so everybody would have done their homework first, yes, and learned their stuff. I used to not even like to write out stuff. I think that's anti-rock and roll. I remember Duck Dunn, the great bass player from Booker T and the MGs, and who was in the Blues Brothers with us with Belushi and Aykroyd, and he said, we had Juilliard horn players and Southerners on the rhythm section, you know, and readers versus non-readers, and Duck said, man, if Elvis had come on, Ed Sullivan, you know, with the band had been reading, man, there would have been no rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And I don't disagree with that. I don't think it's meant to be read. Yeah. Sometimes there's no way around it. And of course, when you do have horns, they seem to need charts, or else they'll all end up playing the same note, and you want three different notes, you know. So you have to arrange when you're forced to. But I like it if people just have listened to the records and learned them just like a garage band and come in with their parts in their own minds and hearts. That's when the music really sounds good. So that's what I used to strive for.
Right.
And the horns are always writing, you know, guys, let's have, you know, let's put in two bars. Wait, they're writing. All right. No, don't write it in yet. Wait, I want to hear it first. Let's see if it's good. You know, wait. Everybody's different, you know.
Well, there's a place for both, isn't there?
Yeah.
So as I wrap up, I wanted to ask about Nashville is a city famous for, of course, country music, but all the broader roots. I mean, bluegrass was invented here, and that's what, and we present Americana roots music. Where does American roots it exists today in your mind in American culture?
Well, I mean, I guess everybody's different. For me, an older cat, that's what I love. You know, I grew up listening to that stuff, looking for it. Country music, yeah, even up in Canada, was very big. In the afternoons, all three stations in my hometown became country stations. And so I did grow up with that sound in my head, and I always talk about Stonewall Jackson and Waterloo.
Oh, great.
One of my all-time favorites. And Leroy Van Dyke, whom I had the pleasure of meeting just last year, and his Auctioneer song, which still rings in my head. But yes, the feeling of people sitting around with guitars and making music, the authentic stuff, that's what when I come to Nashville with my wife looking for music, that's what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. She happens to find it in the honky-tonks on Broadway, and, you know. And when you go to the Opry, they provide you with a beautiful mix of the old and the new.
Right.
And, hey, you know, the new country, it's like the new pop music. A music can't be called upon to just stay stagnant. Everything progresses. Technology has changed all the music, even country music. How are they not going to take advantage of the computer and the new advancements in technology in this recording town? You know, just like that, of course they do. But that's for, you know, music of today. Music was always made for kids, and I think all of us kids remain loyal to the music that we grew up with, and I'm no different.
So you've never been that curmudgeon who says, music used to be so much better.
Oh, of course I am. I am absolutely that curmudgeon, but I try not to be, you know.
Okay.
I still think that anything that gets on the radio, of course, what is radio today? Is it terrestrial? Is it satellite? I don't know, but anything that's getting played is getting played for a reason. Mm-hmm. A hit is a hit for a reason, even today's hits. So I am constantly listening and trying to figure out, well, what is it about this that makes it great? I know something about it. I can still find great stuff to listen to on the radio now, and I'm still dedicating myself to trying, and I've always been a top 40 nut, so I will continue listening.
Paul, so good to meet you. Good luck with future endeavors, and excited to see you back at the Ryman Auditorium.
It is my pleasure, and yes, the Ryman is the 9th, if I may put in one final plug. 9th of June, Valerie Simpson, guest star, the great Steve Cropper playing guitar with me that night, as he will for that whole weekend. He is a legend, wrote so many songs. I got two songwriting legends on stage with me at the Ryman. We're going to have some fun. Please come out and see us.